The Robber Barons, the Interstate Commerce Act, Part 3, the Barons' Deal. After a two-day break, the railroad barons returned to their acrimonious discussion and public speaking on January the 10th, 1889. One account claims, at times, the meeting resembled a meeting of the chiefs of fighting clans in Scotland. Roberts of the Pennsylvania Railroad said, quote, "I can stand it, I suppose, if the others can," end of quote. But turning on Morgan and mocking the bankers, he goes, quote, "Who, with all their horror of railroad wars and rate cutting, are usually ready to help along disturbing factors by selling the securities of any parallel railroad originating," end of quote. To this charge, Morgan replied with a solemn pledge, which was backed by the associate bankers, Kidder, Peabody, the Brown Brothers, and the Barings, in a massed union of his side. Quote, "In regards to the remarks made by Mr. Roberts, in regard to the bankers and the construction of parallel lines, I am authorized to say, I think, on behalf of the banking houses represented here, that if an organization can be formed, practically upon the basis submitted by the committee, and with an executive committee able to enforce its provisions, upon which the bankers shall be represented, they are prepared to say that they will not negotiate, and will do everything in their power to prevent the negotiation of any securities for the construction of parallel lines or the extension of lines not approved by the executive committee. I wish that directly understood." With a show of satisfaction and confidence, Morgan announced after the conclusion of the stormy meeting, quote, "I consider the Western rate wars as practically at an end," end of quote. The Gentlemen's Agreement of 1889 represented a revolution in the United States industrial affairs. Unfortunately, Morgan found the results disappointing to his vision of a supreme economic control. Factions amongst the railroad barons from the Chicago region simply went around him, as you would say, around the corner, and made a pool of their own, resolving to separate the discussion that they were having from the banking interests. The glaring weakness of Morgan's first effort at a nationwide government of the American railway system was seen in the very first season following the meeting. No one in the West paid any attention to what had taken place. Of course, no one was there. Well, not Charles Francis Adams was there, but everybody else wasn't. For example, Jim Hill, who didn't attend the 1889 meeting, took his Great Northern Railroad to the Pacific, as he planned, and forced the Northern Pacific into bankruptcy. And then Charles Francis Adams of the Union Pacific was absolutely under siege. This is an excerpt from his writings. Quote, "In the meanwhile, I was receiving assaults from all quarters of the West, from a hand I could not see and could not understand. There would be something published in Chicago, and then copied in the East, attacking our credit. And then there would be an attack upon us in some Salt Lake City newspaper, or Portland newspaper in Oregon. And the ball would move around the country to hit the Union Pacific in the back. I thought there was some attack from our rivals in the railroad business. I even suspected the Vanderbilts and the lines to Chicago that were opposing the Northwest Alliance. It was none other than the hand of Jay Gould. Of that I am satisfied. He would throw a ball against the wall in the West and it would bound back to the East. Having me in this position with money tight and a large floating debt, my resources failing, the Western management crippled, the earnings showing poorly, where they should have shown handsomely, the Gould trap came into play. Finally, Mr. Gould threw off the mask and came out openly in an interview in the New York Evening Post, in which he attacked me and the credit of the company, and said as a large stockholder he was going to turn me out of office and take the management of the company himself." So as you can see, the barons in the West weren't doing very well, and things were pretty much back to normal. So for 2 years, Morgan, who had brought a certain measure of peaceful confederation, at least on the eastern front, saw only among the western trunkline railroads anarchy. But then again, Morgan could wait. If he could not influence men by talking to them, he would be forced to control them by force. All the events taught him that the need of getting control himself was important to accomplish his ends. Morgan, by reputation, was now a national figure. His reputation was of power and of success. He knew unless something happened, the federal government would wake up and fix the loopholes in the Interstate Commerce Act. That's why he had the meetings in the first place. And not only that, if they're so awakened, they could possibly begin to control not just railroads, but possibly other industries, and perhaps they'd take a look at banking and do something there. He needed to get something in place so that the federal government could be lulled back to sleep, which is where it had been up until the late 1880s, and allow business to remain in control. So in December of 1890, Morgan called a second meeting, and this time, even the Western Railroad barons bowed to Morgan and arrived for the meeting. So you can see the essence of what has been going on here. It's taken a while for Morgan to come to a decision on how this is supposed to work. Obviously, in the first meeting, he didn't try to threaten them or whatever. They had alluded to it. He assumed they would look and see that they got away with a very weak Interstate Commerce Act the first time, and it had enough weaknesses in it that they could work around it. But he knew that if something did not change, ultimately, the people who were complaining to the federal government and causing the federal government to get involved might elect new people to replace some of the older ones, and this is going to get more drastic. And of course, the problem is, these people have been running on their own, doing what they wanted to for so long, they didn't see that piece of it. But that's something that is certainly going to be coming more and more and more important, particularly when we start building trusts later on. And ultimately, you will reach a point where it is Morgan facing the United States of America in one of the most incredible situations, where Teddy Roosevelt, on the verge of bankruptcy of the federal government, calls Mr. Morgan to Washington, D.C. for a face-to-face meeting. We're months away from getting to that. But, you know, the Roosevelt administration is where it all ends up. The Progressive Era, as a result of all of the manipulating that the barons and railroads and industry and other places had done, they did end up getting somewhat controlled. Now, the sources for this are pretty much the same ones that I've been using, which, of course, is Josephson's Robber Barons, The America in the Gilded Age by Cashman, and The Age of Moguls, The Story of Robber Barons and Tycoons by Holbrook. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.